97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, we had a great roundtable earlier. You can always use the Odyssey app. The rewind function is amazing. Go back to 3 o'clock in the show or check out the podcast this weekend on the YouTube or on the Odyssey app or where you find your podcast. We had a good conversation a couple hours ago. We have Brian Kilmeade coming up, kind of a rare Friday appearance, and he's out in the smoke zone in New York City in Manhattan. Of course, he has his show One Nation Sunday night on Fox, 9 p.m. Central. We'll get a preview of that and talk to Brian about the World Cup, too, because he is a huge fan. Actually, I wouldn't be shocked if he's going because he lives out there. A British Open update with Dan Reardon at the end of the hour. Some interesting names, a couple of names you won't even recognize at the top of the leaderboard. It's been an interesting day. 262s. On the course, so that was interesting, but that'll come up a little later. We have a huge race in St. Charles County for St. Charles County Executive coming up. Election Day in the primaries coming up very quickly, 2 weeks from Tuesday. A couple of days ago, I had Jason Law on. He's one of the candidates for the county executive. Bill Igel, former state senator, he ran for governor as well, is obviously seeking this position as well. He's in the studio with us. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Mark, thanks for having me.
Always
a pleasure.
I like the T-shirt. You got the Igel for county executive. Nice colors, nice scheme there. So that's looking pretty good. Is this thing something that you've wanted to do for a long time? Because, look, you had a very successful Senate term, I would say. I think you knocked some heads around there and were a rabble-rouser. You ran for governor. It was a strong race. Why this position? Let's start with that. Why St. Charles County Executive?
Well, I think the thing that attracts to me most about this position is that we've seen at all levels of government, the executive in our forms of government is being called upon to be a leader when it comes to government budgets, when it comes to government priorities, and it comes to really the scope of government and what government is going to do. So the opportunity to go from a legislative position like we had over in the state Senate to an executive position allows me the opportunity to, quite frankly, do a lot of the things that I was talking about as governor for the state. We can actually do those and implement them in a charter county like St. Charles County. So some of the issues are the same when we talk about personal property taxes.
And we'll get to that here in a couple of minutes.
We'll get to that. But a lot of the opportunity, the tone, the priorities, the initiative is set by the executive, and I feel like St. Charles County, where I've raised a family, I've run a business, my wife has grown up in St. Charles County. I feel like we're kind of on the edge of stagnation a little bit. So I think a lot of the ideas that I've been talking about already would be fantastic for the county that I've built a life in.
Has this gotten I think we should just bottom line it here for people who don't know. Steve Ellman, who's the incumbent, was not going to run for re-election,
right?
But he got back into the race because of you.
Yeah.
So is that whole thing personal between you two?
It's not personal for me. It's clearly personal for him. And I got to tell you, Mark, the idea that someone would ask for a sixth term from anybody for the only reason is that he doesn't like one of his opponents personally. That's a terrible reason to run. And I was surprised that Steve said that, but he said that publicly, repeatedly. And when we allow our personal vendettas to determine our activity and actions. I saw this all the time down in Jefferson City, and it hurt policy. So that's a terrible reason to run. He's been very upfront about that.
Well,
so,
I think it's maybe upfront about it, but he also doesn't like your policies, or he doesn't think that your policies could be implemented. That's certainly part of it, right?
Yeah,
I'm not going to deny it's personal for him. I think it is.
Well,
but
I don't know which policy he doesn't like.
The vision, we can get into that. The vision I think he has for St. Charles County is certainly different for you than it is for him. But where do you think, when you talk about stagnation, I hear from people, I mentioned this the other day with Jason. I certainly have a point of reference when it comes to St. Charles because I moved here in 1979 and, there wasn't a whole lot out there. I had this friend that worked at a video store and that was like my only foray unless I was going to Mizzou through St. Charles County. But it is just been
transformed. Did you say you moved to St. Charles in 1979?
No, I moved to St. Louis County in 1979.
St. Louis County, okay.
And I had this friend that, we were in Baldwin, so, 141 and 40, if you will, but he worked, I can't even remember where it was, but there was like this little strip mall with the video store and not a whole lot out, a lot of farmland out there. It has exploded. It's a beautiful part, certainly, of our area, and that's where people seem to want to live. But when you say stagnation, get specific. What are you talking about there?
Well, let's talk about population, first of all. For many years, St. Charles County led the state in terms of population growth. I talked about that at length and in many opportunities. interviews that I've had. But we've actually seen St. Charles County start to slip down the rankings. We used to be number one in the state. Now we're 17th out of 116 counties. So it started to taper off just like it
you
tapered.
You mean with growth, that's
with
the ring?
Population growth.
With
yes.
population growth, okay.
Just like we saw in St. Louis County. So St. Louis County, of course, led growth in the state of Missouri for many years. And then it began to taper off as we saw really the bureaucracy, the government, the tax burden, and all these things kind of build up and slow that growth and kind of restrict the economic opportunity as population started to move further outward. In the short term, a place like St. Charles was naturally the place that growth was going to go. But now we're kind of topping out similar to St. Louis County.
But do you not, I mean, because I thought some of the complaints from you and even Jason and some other people who don't like Steve is that the growth has been too explosive. Or are you just talking about certain types of growth?
So in an overall growth perspective, we've seen it reach a top. We've seen it plateau. And I suspect it's going to continue to follow the model of what's happened in St. Louis County. It's going to start coming down. So what I'm proposing is addressing what I think are the two biggest issues in St. Charles County now that I have made the argument that Steve Ellman is not addressing from the highest elected position in county office. One was the property tax burden. I know we're going to get into that. And two is this rampant growth of multifamily urbanization that we've seen with all the apartment complexes out there. And it's the conversation about apartment complexes is not one just because people inherently don't like apartment complexes. That's not what's going on here. What happens is if you overbuild the density of an area, so you put too many apartment complexes in St. Charles County, regardless if it's in a city limits or not, what happens is the amount of revenue that comes in from those apartments isn't enough to actually support individually the cost that we associate if that apartment has a child living in there and it is going to our schools. So if you overbuild, the tax burden starts to get shared primarily by single family homeowners or businesses. But in St. Charles County, we've done so much residential growth that really the single family homeowners out there are really feeling that
burden. But what do you have? Because I think what Steve's told me in the past is that, look, there are obviously the county is the county, but there's all the cities that are in the county. And those are the ones, the municipalities are the ones that are making the calls on the apartments, aren't they?
Well, so and actually you encapsulated that very well. If you asked Steve, if he were Steer right now, he would say, oh, that's not a county problem. That's the city's problem.
Well,
he said that. The cities have been the ones that are approving all the apartment. Well, that's fantastic. Here's what I would do. One, I would pass a moratorium in the unincorporated areas of St. Charles County that the county does control. Because I've made such an issue out of this, last week or 2 weeks ago, the county council actually passed a small moratorium. Now, it was only for 6 months, which only gets us to election day. So I'd like to see it a lot longer than that, but that'd be the first step. The second step, as the cities were annexing more and more unincorporated St. Charles County ground, where was the county pushing back on that? Where was the county working with the state so they could push back on all these cities who were annexing the ground and then putting a bunch of apartments on it? Then where has the county been in determining density requirements and density levels that the cities ought to follow? For example, we've come out with a master plan. We come out with a master plan for the county every 5 years. The county puts that out. The new master plan that is under draft right now has identified almost 100 new square miles of ground in St. Charles County, unincorporated St. Charles County, that would have the ability to build apartment complexes on there. So whether it's, I've never made the case that the county has approved directly more apartments than the cities, of course not. But I have made the case that Steve Ellman has been very absent on this issue. Instead of being proactive as the highest elected office holder in St. Charles County, he's let the cities basically run roughshod and put up all these apartment complexes. I would, if I were the county executive, not only would I help develop those density standards, but then I would start to leverage those cities to follow those density standards by withholding some of their road boards. You, Mark, you know as well as I do, the best way to get a jurisdiction underneath you to follow your lead is to start leveraging the money. Well, there's a lot of money that goes to those cities through the county, and if they want to continue to participate in all of those dollars that are good things, they're helping for road boards, then I think they need to play ball with the county on some of these density requirements and guidelines.
Bill Igles here, former state senator. He's running for St. Charles County Executive. Let's get into the property taxes. There's nothing that annoys me more, and I think most of the people listening right now, personal property taxes drive us crazy. Property taxes and personal property. When I moved back here to St. Louis in 2006, I couldn't believe, because I think I had kind of forgotten how the whole process worked. And then even with these license offices, which are contractual, they're not run by the state, the whole thing is goofy, right? So I think most people are going to say, yeah, let's try to get rid of that. But what are you doing? Because what they're saying is, what your opponents will say is that you're promising to cut personal property taxes,
right,
but you're just shifting the burden. So what is your plan?
Okay, so here's what I put. Right now, the county budget, which is separate from almost all of the entities that actually get personal property tax, the county budget is about $600 million a year. Since 2009, when Steve Ellman took over, it's grown by 400%. So in 2009, the county budget was about $137 million. Now it's about $606 million. That's way ahead of the rate of growth, way ahead of the rate of inflation. So I'm making the case that Steve has been growing the county government way beyond what was appropriate and way beyond what was what is now dipping into wasteful. The amount of personal property tax that is collected for all the taxing districts, whether it's
school districts,
fire right, ambulance boards, in total is about $120 million a year. So I'm making the case that if we go into that county budget and we can find $120 million of savings out of a $600 million budget, we can effectively pay off the personal property tax bills of the citizens that would otherwise have to pay them on December 1st. So the question becomes, where am I going to find $120 million in savings for, right? Because if we can, then all we have to do is have the county council pass an appropriation to the county collector on behalf of the taxpayers and have them pay off their bills. Having a third party pay off your personal property tax bills, by the way, Steve says this is unconstitutional, but having a third party pay off your property tax bills happens every day because your mortgage company already sends a payment on your behalf to the county collector to pay off your real estate bill. So this is actually a very normal thing. But the question becomes, where are we going to find $120 million? Okay, well, I've made the case that the executive, Steve Ellman, has gotten us into kind of a series of money pits. The family arena, which is losing millions of dollars a year, requiring tens of millions of dollars a year in capital upgrades. The courthouse annex, which is the same story over and over. We've seen a huge explosion in some of our biggest departments. For example, the Parks and Recreation budget has tripled over the past 3 years, even though the actual foot traffic at our parks and our recreation facilities have dropped over the same period. So I think we could go into that budget, taking a page out of the Doge book, and if we can find just 5 to 10% savings in our county government, which has grown by 400% over the past 20 years, we can get rid of personal property tax.
So I'm just going to tell you what they tell me, and you tell me what your reaction is, that you're not actually ending the tax, that you are having St. Charles government, as you said, pay everyone's personal property tax bills, but the taxpayers would still pay. How would it, if I'm in St. Charles and I'm paying personal property tax, how would your plan work and not have me pay as much money in personal property tax?
So
I'm confused by that.
It's kind of similar to, you know how every now and then the federal government, a couple of years ago, the state government came out with this idea that they were going to write everybody a check for $1,000. Or $500.
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically, in a way, that's kind of what we're doing. I'm going into the county budget and finding an amount of savings equal to what everyone pays in personal property tax, and then basically showing that as a credit on their bills when they come out on December 1st. Steve Ellman is actually correct in the sense that you can't eliminate it directly. However, the idea that we can't do anything, which is really his, you know, if he were here, he would say, there's nothing the county can do. The county's done everything it possibly can do. It isn't true at all. We could absolutely find savings in the bloated government that he's created. We've never had more money at the county. I want to take a portion of that money that is going to things that I believe are waste and give that back to the taxpayer to make their everyday household budgets more affordable.
Let me go back to some budget numbers.
Okay.
We talked about a $606 million county budget, right? Mm-hmm. The revenue is $381.7 million is what I'm told, okay? The unrestricted general fund is only about $104.9 million. So what they say is that the $276 that's kind of remained is for specific items like parks, road and bridge, stuff along those lines. Is that true or is that not true in your opinion?
So I think that those folks giving you that are trying to get into the weeds. All of that is money that is spent and appropriated through St. Charles County. Actually, some of it actually does come to the state. And I've heard my opponents say, well, you know, that's money that we're getting from the federal government that are COVID dollars. Somehow the budget keeps getting bigger every single year. And you know what? Maybe instead of finding $120 million of savings like I'm proposing, maybe we only find $100 million. Maybe we only find $60 million. But you know what? I'm the only candidate in this race that's even going to go out there and try to find some savings so that we can bring down the personal property tax and property tax burdens. The reality is, the bottom number is, the budget in 2009 was $137 million. That is coming straight from the county financial audits of 2009. Today, we're spending over $600 million of money that's coming from the taxpayers in our county. I want to put a stop to that. I'm the only one with a plan that's going to actually reduce this tax burden. And really, Steve's only answer to that is to say there's nothing else the county can do.
Well, when you talk about those numbers, and I'm a small government guy, so mm-hmm. I hate it when I see numbers balloon like that. But mm-hmm. but where is, I know you pointed out a couple of things, where is there bloat that would add up to that amount? Is there something specific, or just going to have to go across the board?
Let's take the Parks and Recreation budget. So I gave you kind of, I think a third of the equation is in the so-called money pits that Steve Ellman has got us into. And like I said, the family arena, the courthouse annex, there's a few other things on that list. I also think that take a look at our Parks and Recreation budget. And I know people love Parks and Recreation, but over the past 3 years, our Parks and Recreation budget has tripled. It has tripled because we passed a use tax a couple of years ago that was promised to go into Parks and Recs. Even though we've tripled the budget from $20 million to $60 million a year, the foot traffic at our parks has actually gone down from 2022 to 2024. That's from the county's own numbers. So it tells me, when I started looking into it, that, hey, maybe we've got a little bit of waste here. And sure enough—
You think the numbers are out of whack because of that. Yeah.
And sure enough, what I found was now we're putting more and more things under the Parks Department so that they can directly spend it under the idea and the guise of Parks and Recreation. So if we instead had a county executive who was looking at all of this extra money, this record amount of money, saying, how can we get this back in the hands of our taxpayers that desperately need it right now so they can have a break from property taxes, have a break from personal property taxes, we would be living in an entirely different world. And if I'm successful, the upside here is if I'm successful getting rid of personal property tax in St. Charles, guess what just became the number one destination for all sorts of growth in the state of the Missouri for the near term and I think the long term to come.
Bill Eigel is here. I asked Jason Law to ask you guys some questions. You can ask Steve and Jason a question here in a second that I can play to them. But here's Jason's question from the other day.
You've ran 11 years on cutting personal property tax and never came close. And what are you going to do? And how are you going to change that into the future? In this race, how are you going to do it in 12 months like you've been quoted at saying?
So we've covered this a little bit, but he's saying you've been trying this, you've been talking about it for a while, which you have, right?
So let me answer that directly. Actually, believe it or not, in 2021, I actually got a bill to Governor Parson's desk that would have eliminated reducing the assessment rate for personal property tax in St. Charles County to zero. It got it to Governor Parson's desk, and he vetoed it. So I think Jason is incorrect when he says I haven't come close. I've come very close, but unfortunately, when the governor vetoes that, we weren't able to override his veto because that's kind of frowned upon. So we actually have come close. And actually, the failure to convince more bureaucrats and politicians should not be intermingled with the desire of the people that live in our areas to actually say we desperately need our leadership to come up with a plan to reduce the property tax burden. Mark, you know very well that the process of legislating, of getting things moved through the process, can be very frustrating. And even though I'm known as a guy that stopped legislation we passed House Bill 2540, which I was the primary Senate sponsor on, which was the largest single year tax cut in state history. I passed Senate Bill 26, which was the Police Officers Bill of Rights. So I think I've got a record where we can get things done that are conservative, but at the same time, we can start saying no to the things that really don't fit within our conservative mindset.
So there's a sense about you that if you win this race, that what Bill Eigel is really interested in is really running for governor, that you'd be running a campaign against Mike Kehoe right away. So what would you say about that? Are you going to, if you win this race, will you stay in the race for 4 years or stay in the position?
Absolutely. I'm going to be in the St. Charles County Executive's office for 4 years. That is my commitment to the people that have always supported me. And actually, as you know, I think that's put out by some of my opponents actually put that out in a way that I don't think they realize it, but they're kind of complimenting me.
Well, I've said it just myself because you're ambitious. You run for governor. I don't think it's that far of a stretch to say, okay, what's Bill angling for here in the end?
What a fantastic opportunity it would be to say a lot of the things that you're right, I was talking about in the governor's race, we could do in a county as awesome as St. Charles County. I feel like I'm the only one proposing ideas about how to get rid of personal property tax or how to get rid of how to slow down the apartments, whereas my opponents have really just taken a track of we can't do that, we shouldn't do that, we've seen in the past week, I'm sure you've seen this, a series of personal attacks coming against me, which it's a reminder to me that we're in the midst of campaigns.
I actually haven't seen that. Are those in ads, you mean?
We actually have a PAC here in St. Louis City that's actually run by Democrats that have been putting out mailers against me. We have the Democrats in St. Charles County calling for folks to pull a Republican ballot and vote for Steve because
these things happen.
These things do happen. This is why one day we need to have a conversation about closed primaries. But this, it tells me that when it comes to the conversation and the interaction about ideas, we're winning that going away. So now we're seeing the race kind of turn a little bit, and they're coming back at me with personal attacks. Steve's made this a very personal issue for him because he doesn't like me personally. And you know, I'm used to not being liked by a lot of politicians.
Well, you know that.
That's not breaking news.
All right,
I don't work for that. But go
I'm going to have Steve in on Tuesday. All right, and he can we can flip this and he can ask you a question. We can get you back on too because this is an important race. But I'll play the audio like I did with Jason. What would you ask either one of those guys? And you choose the question, and I'll play that.
What idea does Steve Ellman have to reduce the overall personal and property tax burdens in St. Charles County? Not just the county portion, which he's going to try to escape on, but the overall in total property tax burden for the people in St. Charles. I've been asking that question because he keeps agreeing with me that taxes are a problem, that there's too many apartments. But I'd like to hear him actually have an idea of how he can actually affect that as the highest elected official in the county.
Anything for Jason?
You know, I think Jason is a nice guy. I've had some really good conversations with Jason. I think he's copying a lot of my talking points right now. So I really don't have any questions
for
him.
It seems to be a two-person race for the most part. Jason's problem is, nobody knows who he is, really. I mean, you're established. Steve's established. Thinks he's up against it because of that. Seems like a solid guy.
I like his credentials. Our internal polling right now has us up by a few points on Steve. We're in the high 30s. Steve is in the mid-30s. Jason is not yet at 10%.
It's going to be close, though, isn't it?
So I think it's going to be close.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that's okay. That's okay. I have been – my very first race that I ran in the Senate, it was – I've defeated Ann Zare. There was 24,000.
What year was that?
That was 2016.
Okay.
And that was – we had 24,000 votes cast. I won by 400 votes. So I'm not afraid of close votes. And by the way –
That tells you that votes count. Every vote counts.
Here's a question you can ask Jay. Actually, you know what? I think you're right. I think you're right that
two-person race.
It's a two-person race. Okay. I think folks are going to choose between the ideas I've got on the table or kind of the status quo that Steve.
All right, Steve's in Tuesday. So if you have any other questions, let me know. Thanks, Bill. Good to see you. Good luck. I mean, this is going to be interesting to watch in a couple weeks. Can you believe it's only 2 weeks away though?
I can't believe it, but I'm happy about it.
All right, we'll see you soon. Thank you. By the way, we'll have some interesting shows next week. I know we have Andrew Bailey set for Monday, who is the assistant director of the FBI. And Governor Kehoe is going to be with us next week as well, right, Fred? You got him set up for
what? He's coming Friday in the 5 o'clock hour.
So we'll no doubt talk to him about the constitutional amendments, certainly Amendment 4 and Amendment 5, which he is behind. We'll have Steve Ellman on Tuesday. I know on Monday afternoon, Josh Hammer is going to be with us for his kind of biweekly visit from down in Florida. Anything else that you want to talk about that I should know about?
I think that's it. We got Frank again on Monday.
You know who's coming to town next weekend? Scott Jennings. I don't know if he'll be here on Friday. If he's here on Friday, we may have to throw him on, but we're going to baseball games on Saturday and Sunday. But he hasn't been to St. Louis since last Memorial Day weekend. Like, you know, it was that game that Arenado had that amazing catch where he sort of, you know, tripped into the stands and they made the gold seat out of it. But Joe Arnold, our mutual friend, and Scott, they're going to make their way to St. Louis next weekend, which will be fun. We have a rare Friday appearance by Brian Kilmeade coming up next. A little controversy at the U.S. Open today. We'll cover that with Dan Reardon coming up before audio cut of the day. But right now, from New York City, Brian Kilmeade for a rare Friday visit. How are you this afternoon?
All good. All good. Busy day.
Well, the first question is, can you breathe where you're at?
Yeah, I mean, it's really bad. Really bad. And last night, it was incredible. And you're talking about Canada to Long Island and Manhattan. It looks like a brown screen is over the street. Just starting to clear up now. Hopefully it's going to be good for Sunday.
Yeah.
For the World Cup, just about 15 miles from work.
Yeah, I think I've heard, and I heard a couple of the meteorologists that you guys had on today saying it looks like it will be good. We had some of this haze last year, but nothing like, you know, occurred up north in Chicago. So we're a little familiar with the haze, but with the video and the still images I've seen, my sister is in New York City right now. It's unbelievable. I mean, in Detroit, they canceled like all the outdoor activities, I heard.
I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, they pushed the Met game up early. Some people say it's really dangerous with a sport that demands so much heavy breathing. Do you push it to Monday if you think it's going to clear up? I mean, it wouldn't be the craziest thing. It's not that it would be that different from the rest of the tournament because they had games at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, during the week. So it wouldn't be that crazy. It wouldn't be a disaster like when golf does it. Everyone's really back in work. You know, you have no crowds, but this wouldn't even affect that. But my sense is it's going to come off.
So I was at the it was at our MLS game last night. We won, actually. I did not see the speech. I've kind of caught up with, you know, some of the coverage today. But what did you make of what happened last night with the president?
Yeah, I didn't really discuss it much. I didn't see much new there. I don't think it was necessary. I think his strategy now is not to talk much about Iran, just do it. And I understand that. And he talked about some things that are going well. I think it was just a crisp speech on how he viewed what China and people who are not citizens, what they voted in 2020. So we didn't really talk about it much today. I didn't think it was that impactful.
No, I didn't think it was that impactful either. And, you know, I think it's a little bit taking your eye off the ball because of the economy. I don't think people are waking up this morning, you know, and saying, hey, we're going, there's a small percentage, but we're going after the election violators. I think that the American people have a lot more things on their mind right now. Have you ordered Joe Biden's book, Brian? Have you ordered it yet? Because it's coming out, right?
Yeah, I can't wait. And what a promo. Did you ever see something? I mean, can you imagine how many takes it took to get that promo and how many edits it was just to get it out? You literally cannot put a sentence together. Who is greenlighting this? Who paid him? What family member said it was good to cut that? I mean, it's unbelievable. Does anybody care about this guy?
Well, that's what I said. Look, you really have to be, and I think we saw some of this certainly a couple years ago, but it seems like it's just Hunter and Dr. Jill that are advising him. I don't know how anyone, you know, with a brain in politics could advise him. It's one thing to put out a book, but to put that trailer out where you look even more feeble than you did a couple of years ago, yeah, not a great move.
Well, a couple of things, too. He did push it back past the election, or else I think it would be out already.
Yes.
Number two, I mean, if you put together promos, you don't need to take a fresh, you know, do a fresh read. You could do other things. You know, you could show him in 1980 and 1998, and you could have a voiceover. He came on the scene in 1978. He suffered through tragedy, but now you get the true story. You don't need to embarrass him by making him talk. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
Let me ask you about Mayor Mamdani, because when Cori Bush was elected here the first time, and our former Mayor Tashara Jones and then Kim Gardner, you know about her story, the very first thing that they did, which was very telling, is they went to something called the Workhouse here in St. Louis, is the jail. And you're telling me, I mean, I could have seen this and thought it was a joke. Mamdani goes to Rikers to watch the World Cup with... They're New Yorkers, Brian. They may be killers and rapists and all that, but they're New Yorkers. They're part of New York, right?
Can he be more bizarre? Can he be more dumb? Can he be more ridiculous? Can he be more off-putting? I mean, you don't think there's any cops? You don't think there's a group of cops watching a viewing party? You can't show up there and pretend as if you don't hate the blue? You can't walk into a firehouse and see what's going on? You can't walk into a town, like the downtown and village in New York City. They say, I haven't been down there, but all my coworkers live there. They say you walk down the street and it's flat screen after flat screen. So you could go in there and really feel the people, the pulse of the people, talk to people about what's going on, see the thrill of Argentina's comeback victory. But instead, he goes to prison as if to say, hey, you've been put here for a wrong reason. We're going to empty this place soon. And that's what I think he intends to do.
It's really disgusting and comical to watch from this part of the country. All right, what's your World Cup pick? Let's get to a selection for tomorrow. I'm going for Spain because I got a little family in Spain that I lived with in 1983, and we're in touch. So I'm on Team España right now, Brian.
Well, I tell you what, it's just so interesting because you got the 19-year-old superstar, and then you got the legend at 39 years old. Both will play a prominent role. You have the coach of Argentina who is mentored by the coach of Spain. You have Messi, who's played 21 years playing club soccer in Barcelona. So, I mean, there's so many connections. But I think that I'm pulling for Argentina, but I think Spain wins. They seem to be the best fundamental team.
The
way they handled France.
I just have to say how much fun. Look, I think I've told you this. I'm not the biggest, you know, football guy, but I've had, and I know so many people like me that really aren't, you know, dedicated to soccer that have had just a thrilling time watching this World Cup. It's really, really been fun. What's coming up on your show on Sunday night?
Brian Mast is going to talk about this Iran war, the actual war plan. I got Mike Rowe, a data center. What's the big deal? Why is everyone pushing back against it? How many jobs are you keeping from pipe fitters, electricians, and plumbers? These people aren't getting hired because those people are reading propaganda, maybe put on TikTok that says they're dangerous. And then I got Rod Blagojevich. He has a documentary that tells a true story very similar to Trump's being railroaded. And also he is a Democrat, but not a socialist. He weighs in on what's happening to his party. and then Tommy Lahren on media, and then Brian Johnson. He does not want to die. He's the one doing the longevity experiments, making his body a human experiment, and he is got a disease that it's a chronic disease. He's not going to shake, so he's going to talk about that and all the secrets to longevity that he's uncovered by being a human experiment.
Hey, I got to ask you one more question. I thought I was flashing back to like 10 years ago. Did I see, can you confirm that I see that you did an ice bucket challenge this week?
Yeah, Tim Green, I'm good friends with, has ALS. And so Chris Johnson is a friend of their families, and he got ALS. So he tagged me, so I did that. And now Ainsley and Lawrence got to do it. Can we tag you?
You can tag me. You better make sure those two do it, though. If you want to tag me, I'll be in. I did it 10 years ago, but yeah, I'll commit to that. How about that?
Hey, it's raising money for them. We definitely could use it. And at the Massachusetts General, it goes to their research. So it's a good cause.
It's awesome. All right, dude. Thank you so much, Brian. Enjoy the World Cup this weekend. I hope everyone can breathe, and we'll talk next week.
And I'll see everybody in person in November at BrianKilmeade.com. Remember,
November 21st. It's getting closer. Tickets on sale at the factory. We'll see you, Brian. Take care.
Go get it.
Well, I played this one for Sue because it's the Mavericks.
I can't sleep away anymore.
Now, Sue Thomas, you know that Raul Malo died from the Mavericks, right? We talked about that. We were both huge fans.
Yes.
But, you know, they are coming to St. Louis for this tribute next week. And, you know, I was talking about this with you, and I think we kind of talked about it at the time, because Raul was such a really important figure. Certainly in my life musically, I was a huge, huge fan. I've seen the Mavericks so many times. But, you know, when they said that they were going to tour, I'm like, I don't know about this.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's like a tribute to Raul. So because of that, I don't know. I think I might go. It's next Thursday, by the way, July 23rd. Aren't we having a little barbecue that night?
Is that the 23rd?
Night? Yeah, I think it might be. But that's okay. I could still go. I mean, look, the barbecue, I could get over there for the show. They won't go on until after 9, and they're
at
the pageant.
No, we're not on the 23rd.
Now, which date are we?
We are on the 30th.
Okay. See, then I have no conflict. I have no conflict.
Okay,
I might go.
Write that down, please.
Yeah, that it's on the
30th?
The 30th,
yeah.
Don't I get email and text notifications from you?
Maybe.
Okay, we'll check. Dan Reardon, Sue's going to be back with traffic. I'll have audio cut of the day. Dan Reardon is with us this afternoon. I've left us, Dan, just a little extra time to talk about the U.S. Open because, God love him, Bryson DeChambeau, we have controversy, don't we? How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing fine, and it certainly is entertaining. And, you know, with his Texas background and his behavior, he's sort of a maverick, I would say. But you know, we were spared, I think, a bad moment because of this penalty situation. Because if it had not occurred, the final group at the the Open Championship would have been two players from the LIV Tour. And I don't think the world is ready for that just yet.
No, I think you're right about that. But I haven't really, outside of Frank joining me, you know, before the 5 o'clock hour, I haven't really run this down for people this afternoon. So what happened? I've seen some of the video. He ends up in this tall, tall grass, right? More than rough, tall grass. And he's accused of improving his line. He gets a two-stroke penalty.
It's really simple, Mark. It's not controversial with all due respect to Frank Cusumano. Bryson hits his ball into what is knee-deep rough. The grass is knee-deep in length. Now, it's dry, and they're getting through it comfortably. But as he goes into where his ball is, he stomps down the grass behind his ball. He literally stomps it down, and then he steps around and then goes in one more time and presses the grass down behind the ball. And now the grass no longer interferes with his backswing.
Yeah, you can't
do
that.
Clear it.
Right.
It's a clear improvement of the shot. Now, what he should be doing is thanking the RNA, because if he came in and signed his card and then some official – called attention to that later, he only had 15 minutes to correct that mistake on his card, or he would have been off on Saturday because he would have been disqualified. It was, like I said, give him credit for the round he shot, and he should know better than that. Bryson, I hope that it was unintentional, but it was clearly a violation of the rules.
By the way, I don't think, just to be clear, I don't think Frank really called it controversial. I'm probably the one that's, you know, making it more dramatic here, because I've watched the video during some of the commercial breaks and I saw the exchange with the officials. What do you think? Here's the thing. What do you think he was trying to argue? Because he was arguing with them and yelling and trying to make the case when, to your point, Dan, it does seem pretty obvious that this was a rules violation.
Oh, I think what Bryson said is, my swing in that situation would have been so steep that the grass was not going to interfere with my swing. I think that's a pretty weak argument. And they also said that afterwards that some people were suggesting he threatened to leave the tournament.
Yeah.
Well, it was a short-lived threat because he went to the driving range to practice for tomorrow's round.
And where does he sit on the leaderboard right now?
Now he's three shots off the lead of Lucas Herbert, who I said is from the LIV Tour. The story really is the golf course got just hammered today. I mean, they blasted this golf course into submission. Everybody thrived on that golf course. Mark, 111 players in the field are now averaging 300-plus yards off the tee this week because of the conditions they have at Royal Birkdale. And so here's what you want to look for on the weekend. Every morning, we've seen good scores. Every afternoon, they've moderated. The weather will be the same tomorrow and on Sunday. That means there's going to be players who are going to come up the leaderboard because they're playing in the moderate conditions and not dealing with the later conditions. It will almost play out like leapfrog, which it has done the first couple of days. You know, the only one that's remained constant there is Jackson Subra, who we talked about yesterday, and he was only one under on today's round. So I think we're looking at a really congested leaderboard on Sunday with the possibility of somebody like a Rory McIlroy, who's only at one under right now. I don't think Lucas Herbert is going to win this championship. So 8 under is irrelevant. 6 under is irrelevant. Is relevant, I mean. So Rory's only 5 off the lead.
Yeah.
He's only 2 off the lead.
Yeah, there's a lot of names. Look, I got to tell you, this is where I'm hoping it doesn't happen because Siwoo Kim was like plus 4,400 on Wednesday. And he is sitting at minus 5 right now, tied for 5th. So I did not place that bet, Dan, and I'm going to hope that I don't regret not placing that bet because his stats have been really good, and I don't know why the odds were so long, but I was about to jump on that. Let's talk about one more thing because I saw this and I reposted it. It makes the amateur golfers and those of us who play golf feel a lot better, but I feel bad for Jordan Spieth. Look, he three-putted on a putt that was like 3 feet under 4 feet, and he three-putted on that, and he finishes way down, like almost last, plus 9 in the tournament.
Yeah, and it doubles up on Jordan because this was one of the moments of his life when he won the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale, and he came in playing reasonably well this year. He didn't anticipate that he would tank. He shot 73 the first day, 76 the second day, and just disappeared completely. But I got to believe that halfway through the round, Jordan was just depressed about how much he had hoped for something special this week and got exactly the opposite.
Well, and you know, some of the other stuff that's happening we haven't talked about, but I'm dialed into this and I'm sure you are too. Nick Faldo said some things about Bryson that were rather, you know, I think insulting to Bryson, talking about how he has no strategy. He could have Bryson. The problem is here, I used to not like him at all. A lot of us used to hate Bryson because he acted like a jackass. And then we're like, wow, he does all these YouTube videos and he's very likable. Today was one of those moments that kind of made you feel like he was the old Bryson. But I think he probably did take those comments from Sir Nick personally. He could have taken the high road and said, look, you know, look what I did last year. I think he shot a 77 in the first round and then he shot 3 rounds in the 60s. So he maybe some immaturity reared its ugly head with Bryson again this week.
Well, you know, Mark, on Wednesday, I said there were going to be two kinds of players in this field. One are the ones that are going to play cautious and one that's going to bomb. Bryson is the bomber, and he made it work for 2 days, regardless of the two-stroke penalty. You know, both days on the ninth hole, 407 yards, he went for that green with the driver and darn near pulled it off. In fact, they joked on today's round that Scheffler was playing with him, and he and Tyrrell Hatton thought that Bryson had hit the flags above the grandstand. That's how far he was trying to move the ball in the wind.
Oh, my.
So he's been entertained.
Yeah.
And he can continue to bomb through the weekend. He will provide the entertainment factor in this championship. Whether the two-stroke penalty throws him a stride, I don't know. But I just think we're looking at a really congested leaderboard on Sunday.
Well, that could make it fun, Dan. Enjoy the weekend, and maybe we'll catch up and see what happens on Monday. I appreciate it.
And by the way, Kim is only vulnerable on the greens. And if he can get through 2 days on the greens, he'll be a possible winner.
Well, now I'm kind of rooting against him. You know that, though, right? Because I'll feel sick to my stomach. I really will. See you, Dan. Thank you. Take care.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, we're going to call an audible here. Fred just supplied me with a little audio from the president, with the FIFA president on the whole red card controversy from a couple of weeks ago. So I haven't even heard this yet, but I'm going to trust that it's good audio and qualifies as audio cut of the day.
This has been a tournament like no other, filled with fierce competition, unforgettable moments, yet unforgettable moments, like probably the most unforgettable is when they gave that gentleman, is it a red card? And I was forced to call Johnny and just make a recommendation. I said, Johnny, I'd like to make a recommendation. Let the guy in the game. No, I didn't say that. I said, I'd like to wage a complaint. And actually, I had no idea what was going to happen. But, you know, it's so much better the way it worked out because there's no controversy. They won the game and our team had all of its players. You made another great decision, if you think about it. I know you'll never get credit. You'll never get credit for this. Think of it if he didn't allow him and they let him say, we would have won the game if we had our best player. So Johnny made yet another of his many good decisions.
I'm not sure that's going to improve on the controversial aspect of that, but there he was, and the president will be there on Sunday as well. We'll be back Monday at 3. Have a great weekend.
Get more at 971talk.com.